I think it's safe to say by now that the more cynical among us who predicted that talk of gun control would once again fade away as some time passed after the Newtown shootings was wrong, which is not to say that plenty of cynicism hasn't been on display in the ways the pro-gun lobby has attacked any mention of sensible limits on access to any and all firearms. But the White House has pressed on. And the NRA has pushed back with messaging like this.
Are the president's kids more important than yours?
You know, it sounds just like a parody you would have heard on Air America once upon a time. But this is the divisive garbage that extremists are putting out there themselves. So those are the voices opposing any and all reform. Meanwhile, what was said in the administration's meetings on the subject? Well, attending those meetings was the Reverend Michael McBride, a Berkeley pastor and lead organizer of the Lifelines to Healing campaign, part of the National PICO Faith-Based Community Organizing Network, and I am so very pleased to have Mike join us now on State of Belief Radio. Pastor Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Reverend. So glad to be here with you.
We've all heard Vice President Joe Biden committee's recommendations by now and the steps President Obama took on Wednesday. But take us back for a minute. From the outside, it looked to many of us like an unusually focused week in the nation's capital. What was it like for you to be in those meetings?
Well, certainly it was an amazing opportunity to engage in a very constructive conversation with the vice president and his task force around the moral imperative that I think a lot of us believe we have to address the spiraling issue of gun violence in our country. It certainly was a lot of open communication, very serious kind of interrogation and interest in what was on our minds as faith leaders and what we're hearing, and a little bit of testing of some of the common themes that they were hearing in some of their other meetings, and just trying to find some resonance. It was a wonderful moment personally to be able to be there and be able to remind the vice president and many others on the task force that this issue of gun violence is one that has been a hugely problematic and challenging problem for a lot of our cities and neighborhoods all across the country. So it was just great to be there to have that conversation.
We were together the other day out at the National Cathedral, and I noticed that you take a lot of notes.
Yes.
Try to remember and tell us some of the most remarkable things you heard
in the vice president meeting. Well, you know, I think certainly, you know, hearing him say that even though there was lots of dissonance, right, there were moments of agreement. And I think, you know, that was one profound kind of takeaway that for a lot of the talk we hear across the country where people are not in agreement, the vice president was seeming to suggest that there were places of agreement, like universal background checks, that there were lots of folks who were asking for mental health, you know, kind of supports. Mm-hmm. There was a moment in those meetings where some of our Muslim and Sikh brothers and sisters were talking about the shootings that are visiting their houses of worship, and how a lot of them were feeling like, you know, the conversation about tolerance and religious intolerance in our country was something that we all needed to visit. And I think even more profound and hopeful was this unifying kind of theme among all of us, including the vice president, that we all needed as faith leaders to have and lead a national conversation around, you know, violence and the culture of violence in our country. And he did certainly express to us that he was looking to us as faith leaders and people of faith to help lead that conversation, that conversation couldn't just come from politicians, mm-hmm. from the White House, from congressional members, but that pastors and imams and rabbis and priests needed to go back to our congregations and our communities, mm-hmm. and challenge all of us to look within ourselves to figure out how can we begin to change the culture of death and violence in our country. And I think a lot of us, you know, own that as an assignment that, you know, quite frankly, a lot of us are doing anyway. But right. It was great for us, to, I think, to just be in a space to look around the table and say, we think you're right, Mr. Vice President.
Among the religious leaders there, was there any negative voice?
No, and you know, I think that's worth mention, right? Because you know, I think there are lots of reasons why people divide ourselves because of our theological beliefs and assumptions. Mm-hmm. But I think again, when it comes to life, and when it comes to how do we promote life and healing, I think that is a sweet spot, if you will, where all of us can agree. And you know, I would like to believe that invitations were given out to people who weren't just going to kind of be a, mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. You know, yes person, yes, to the vice president,
right.
You know, so there was a representative from the center or from the National Association of Evangelicals that was there in the room, and he offered this quote that I've been repeating all over the place, that 70% of their evangelical leaders actually agree with, you know, some of these common sense gun laws like universal background checks and assault weapons bans and other things. So for us, I think it was just a great opportunity for us to just, you know, kind of hear that a lot of us are in the same place. But it's not a given that our people are. And I think that's right. The challenge that's in front of us.
Well, opposition to any and all change has been as loud as it was predictable. How do you respond to the arguments of the NRA-type leadership? And do you think that the extremists on this issue are going to escalate their tactics along the NRA lines?
Well, you know, I would hope not. I mean, I'm reminded of a passage in the Hebrew scriptures of I think it was the prophet Elijah, and he has a mentor that, you know, is surrounded by all these armies, and the mentor is kind of, you know, freaking out, and Elijah says, you know, prays and says to God, open his eyes, you know, because there are more with us than are with them, right? And I think that, you know, If the polls are right and if these surveys are right that are being done in lots of these different focus groups, there are a lot more people who agree with the common sense reform. So I think, you know, the work is for us to get those voices out here and to kind of counteract some of the hysteria that is being propagated. Some people may have some fears that are legitimate, but to help people to understand that, you know, what we're talking about is not taking anyone's Second Amendment rights away, but it's attempting to give us all an opportunity to be free from the fear of gun violence.
Yeah.
Now, in my own context, I shared a story with the vice president of a young person. His name was Larry. He was 16 years old. He was killed in the city of Oakland where I pastor a church. And I had to do his funeral. And there were 500 young people in the funeral when I did his services. And I asked the young people, how many of you have been to more than one funeral? And I got as high as 10 funerals. And still over half of the 500 teenagers still had their hands in the air. So for us, in a lot of our urban neighborhoods and communities across the country, where 40% of the gun murders are happening in 70 cities, 40% of all gun murders are happening in 70 cities across the country, this issue is something that requires a very important kind of, you know, honest look from everyone all across the board. And we need to just figure out how do we get to a common place that saves lives, that honors people's rights to legally own guns, but also make sure that illegal weapons are not being trafficked into our communities, that programs are being put in place to help change people's behaviors and perceptions about these kind of weapons, and that folks are really making sure that we create the kind of country and community that we all say we want: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I think that's something all of us deserve a fair shot at.
Do you know, Mike, I know some people that I actually thought they were smarter before they asked this question, but I don't know about that for sure now. But they would ask you or say to you, gun control is not a religious issue. Hmm. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would respond by saying that, you know, maybe they're right, but it's a values issue, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us get our values from somewhere. And as a person of faith and as a clergy leader who helps, you know, disciple people and help people have a meaningful relationship with God, you know, how we live out our faith is in many ways a reflection of our values. And there are lots of people in our country who may not subscribe to a particular religious faith, but we all have common values.
Yeah.
And I think even if we look at the Constitution, which really shapes lots of people's values, we still see things in the Constitution that are guaranteed to all of us, like mm-hmm. equal protection under the law. That's mm-hmm. a value that I think we all hold dear.
Yeah.
The truth is that some of the laws are not providing us all with equal protection.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mentioned life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are values we all agree on. And the truth of the matter is, with, you know, what, 30,000 people being, you know, killed by guns every year, we're not having access to life. With people not able to send their children to the mall or to the park or to their schools, people aren't having liberty.
Mm-hmm.
With 100,000, you know, injury shootings that are taking place every year, people are being robbed of happiness. So
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, I can accept people kind of pushing back on, you know, just imagining it as a strictly religious issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we all would acknowledge that this is a very important values conversation. And I think it's important for all of us, progressives, conservatives, independents, black, white, gay, lesbian, whatever you like to identify yourself with, our values are all the same. We want to have the best quality of life. And this is an opportunity for us to make sure that happens.
Well, that's well said. Are you and your colleagues afraid of the pro-gun lobby that they are going to scuttle this?
Well, you know, I think I'm afraid might be too harsh of a way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have some concern, you know, not just about the gun lobby, but just about the state of our American politics in general. You know, there just seems to be such a unwillingness by both parties to find common ground about anything.
Right.
And, you know, I salute the president and the vice president for taking their charge serious enough to really put forth some recommendations. You know, a lot of us feel like we wish they would have gone a little farther with some targeted approaches to urban gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope that the Congress, you know, picks that charge up and really builds that out. But I think that there's an opportunity, again, for us to transcend the politics of party and transcend this kind of narrative of fear and do what's in the best interest of all of the members of our country. And so, you know, I want to believe that there are sensible and compassionate folks in the NRA. Again, most of the surveys that we've all seen time and time again tell us that NRA members and legal gun owners agree with what we're saying.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's important for us just to I think, take a few steps back and both sides and not get too entrenched in this kind of, you know, brinksmanship and feel like, you know, this has got to be a bare knuckles fight. And let's find out how do we get to common sense, you know, reform that honors people's dignity, that respects the laws and the values that we all hold dear, and not live in fear. And I think that for me is the big thing. So I'm not going to embrace, you know, fear of the NRA or fear of the conservatives or fear of the progressives or fear of any. I'm
mm-hmm.
just let's look at the best that we have to bring to this, and let's move forward and solve some problems for the good of our country.
Gosh, you talk like a religious leader.
Well, I've been told a few times that, you know, I gotta get my shtick together, right?
Well, listen, I don't want you to get away without talking about your work with PICO and the Lifelines to Healing campaign.
Great.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, the Lifelines to Healing campaign is a effort of faith congregations all across the country, multi-faith, multi-racial, you know, at least I say 300 or 400 congregations, you know, kind of in about 20 or so states, all working on issues related to gun violence, issues related to criminal justice reform, really attempting to address issues of incarceration and reentry and second chances, and also building an opportunity framework for people who are largely locked out of jobs and skills, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been an amazing campaign. This is in our third year, and we have been able to win a wonderful set of campaign wins in local cities, stopping jail expansions and pushing the resources that were going to be used for jails into strengthening schools and jobs. We're hugely attempting to make sure that gun violence, particularly street level gun violence, has a well resourced strategy. The strategy we champion is the Boston ceasefire model that is able to reduce gun related homicides in urban neighborhoods by 60%. In a couple years, and it brings together law enforcement, clergy, community members, formerly incarcerated folks, realizing all of us have a role in healing the pains of our country and the pains of our neighborhood. So it's a great campaign. You can visit us on lifelinestohealing.org. LifelinesToHealing.org and learn more about our campaign. We're having a great big event on this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, where we will engage in Gun Violence Prevention Sabbath, where we have over 150 congregations all across the country, lifting up our voices around stopping the violence. So it's a great campaign, and we would love for you to visit us on Facebook and online and sign up.
Good. We're out of time, but I've got to ask one question that needs a very short answer. I'm not really a political activist, a person says, but I've heard you, and I want to do something about this gun situation. What's the most important thing I could do to get started?
Well, it depends on what level you're thinking of. If you're just talking about street level violence, I believe that every neighborhood in our country needs people of goodwill, people of faith, people of courage and love to just go outside your homes and your places of worship and your jobs and connect with people, build relationship with folks. People just need to know that people care. And I think if you do things like that, you will find that our country will slowly begin to heal itself just by building meaningful relationships with people who are often invisible until they do something that's a little bit, kind of beyond the pale. So just building those kind of relationships and if getting all bogged down in the political thing is not your thing, we have a lot of folks, but just loving folks and meeting folks and letting your light show shine, I think it goes a long way.
The Reverend Michael McBride is pastor of the Way Christian Life Center in Berkeley, California, and lead organizer of the Lifelines to Healing campaign, part of the National PICO Network. He's in Washington, D.C. this week to attend last week's meetings on ending gun violence. Pastor Mike, thank you so much for taking time to come by and talk with us at State of Belief Radio, and even more, thank you for what you're doing every day for the good of our country.
Thank you, Reverend. Glad to be here.